This is Sierra Dahl with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum. And today, Catherine Johnson will be discussing benefits of cities and utilities of beneficial electrification. So, Catherine, why don't you go ahead and start us out on this topic?
Okay. Well, first of all, welcome, and I'm glad folks have dialed in. This is actually, I am no way claimed to be an expert on this topic. It's just a topic that's getting a lot of interest and traction in the industry, especially the convergence between energy efficiency and grid modernization, which is, seems to be the two big drivers in the electric utility industry right now. And so a lot of the work that I do and the conversations I've been having at various conferences and with clients around the country has sort of focused on grid modernization in terms of, we know the infrastructure of the grid is old, and obviously there's a lot of interest in upgrading the grid because, as we know, the base load is continuing to increase. If you just think about it in your own home, 15 years ago, we didn't have so many little devices that plugged into the wall. We didn't have big LED TV screens. We didn't have multiple computers, didn't have multiple cell phone chargers, not to mention gaming boxes and all those other things. And so that has increased the usage of what we call the base load in the home, along with which means that the average energy usage has increased among households, despite the efforts by the EPA and other agencies to make sure that we're using devices with better energy savings. So the demand for energy increases, along with the fact that the grid is old, and we know that the grid is aged because we have something still called power outages and failures, and not just weather-related, but the grid is basically having brownouts and things like that. So on top of that concern, there's also been an increased growth in several different types of electric technologies that, frankly, are intriguing to utilities as they look for ways to basically figure out a way to increase their load in the off-peak hours. And electric vehicles are actually one of the largest growing areas in the market, and it's not just Tesla. There's a lot of companies that are coming out with electric vehicles, and electric vehicles are becoming a new real load builder for energy utilities, as well as and they're actually predicting that, you know, within the next 10 years, electric cars are going to be much more common in the future. They're predicting in 80 million electric vehicles in the next probably 25 years, which is pretty big. And then on top of that, we also have the growth of smart appliances. We have smart thermostats, which we can use to program to turn off the heating and air conditioning when we're not home and set it on vacation schedules. But in addition to smart thermostats, we're also having smart water heaters that can be tied into circ cycle on and off so they can help save energy during peak periods, and other types of smart appliances, including integrated heat pumps, battery storage, ice storage, and also other types of even smart laundry, dryers and electric washers and dryers that'll only do laundry on and off-peak times. So there's a whole shift between trying to get utilities to modernize the grid and also to use off-peak times when there's not so much demand as a way to make sure that their load's balanced, and also as a way to sort of capture what may have been lost in energy generation from solar and PV. So this is a convergence, and the new term is called beneficial electrification. And a lot of utilities in major states like California and Massachusetts, New York, Ohio, and Pennsylvania are actually thinking about putting in ways to do fast charging of plug-in electric vehicles and other strategies they can use to help encourage the adoption of these smart grid technologies. So that's my but I'd love to hear what other people say.
All right. Anybody want to weigh in on this? Chris Carrick, why don't you bring us up to date a little bit what's going on in New York?
Sure. Yeah, I can do that. So I work for a regional planning agency based in Syracuse, New York, and we do quite a lot of work under contract with NYSERDA. And as folks on the call may know, New York has been engaged in some fairly rigorous activity under the banner of the Reforming the Energy Vision initiative, which has required utilities to create plans on how they're going to meet some of the goals outlined under REV. One of our major utilities is National Grid. I was recently at a presentation by National Grid on what they're working on, and frankly was a little underwhelmed. They are planning and rolling out some smart meter initiatives. We're quite far behind that, even when you compare what they're doing here with what they've done already in Massachusetts and Rhode Island. So we've some catching up to do in terms of smart meters. But their plans for rolling out electrical vehicle infrastructure is, you know, on the order of, you know, 5 years or so. They're putting out some rebate programs for heat pumps, but those are only available to customers that what they call electric-only customers. So if you're a natural gas customer of National Grid, you're not eligible for these heat pump rebates. I think from my perspective, when looking at what the state and what the governor has outlined, even in his Green New Deal proposal, the utilities are pretty slow to, I think, respond, unfortunately. So I recently gave a presentation on to a coalition of environmental advocacy groups in our region on whether 100% renewable energy was feasible, where I outlined some of the research that's been done on this topic, and I think there's some rigorous debate on whether that 100% target is realistic or how soon we might achieve that, but I think there's a lot of interesting work being done on the area of beneficial electrification. How much will a rapid shift to EVs and heat pumps actually, change the annual, monthly, weekly load curves for utilities? But there, to my knowledge, at least in New York, we don't really have the good research, and we certainly don't have a robust state energy plan that would look at that to say, if we reach 20, 40, 50% EV penetration in the market in the next, let's say, 10 years, what exactly would that do on a localized distribution circuit level, for example, to change loads and demand on the grid? And to what extent could that be powered by distributed generation? So that's what I'm pushing for as the state gears up to revise its state energy plan, is that kind of detailed planning and analysis. But I'd be interested to hear, if folks from other states, is that kind of work being done? Is this something we could look to as a model?
Okay. Anybody else here?
Can I jump in?
Yeah, one thing here, would people mute their phones if they're not talking? We're getting a little bit of background noise here. So, all right, go ahead.
I'm Okshan Bayi again. I have a sort of a simple, basic question. This concept of beneficial electrification, I have not come across this often in the literature. I'm wondering, what are the origins of this, and maybe a little bit more clarification on the definition of what it really means. Does it refer mostly to efficiency in the electrification, or does it refer to something more unique to utilities, how they deal with it? I was wondering if Catherine could provide another sort of definition for this, and maybe talk about the sort of the origins of this concept, how it sort of emerged
right.
and entered the sort of a lexicon for clean energy.
Sure. Well, beneficial electrification is that the utility industry goes in cycles, and they go through load growth periods and then load constrained periods. And that was the original load constraint led to the development of energy efficiency back in the 70s at the Department of Energy. So, you know, just to sort of put everything in perspective. So beneficial electrification, and this is my opinion only, is another word for load building for electric utilities. Mm-hmm. And basically what they're doing is they're looking for – that the term means to replace fossil fuels such as propane, heating oil, gas, gasoline, natural gas with electricity that reduces overall emissions and energy costs. So what they're saying is if you want to decarbonize the environment, which is what the approach Minnesota is using, for example, they're talking about beneficial electrification as a strategy to wean us from fossil fuels. Now, there's a little sticking point because some of the electricity is generated through coal and natural gas, so, you know, I don't want to get too fine on point on it. But basically, it's a strategy to replace vehicles that rely on fossil fuels, including gasoline, to replace them with electric usage, which would then – and solar and wind, which are obviously can generate electricity. And they're an opportunity to switch customers from the fossil fuel to the electric non-fossil fuel-based solar and wind options. And so the technologies that they're emphasizing in this beneficial electrification is our electric vehicles, obviously, electric heat pumps and heating systems. And then, of course, there's a lot of different other strategies out there like storage for heating and water heaters can be turned on and off for load control. But the real notion is that this is a strategy that the electric utility industry is promoting as a way to get out of the fossil dependence on fossil fuels, of course, electric vehicles and gasoline being the biggest example. But in real life, it's another way for electric utilities to look at ways to generate load off peak and to basically have customers switch from gas heating to electric heating, which is probably not the politically correct thing to say, but it's kind of a fact. So that's why Sierra likes me, because I'm blunt.
Thank you for that.
No comment on that one.
Well, I mean, politics aside, it's a fuel switching policy. I mean, we used to electric. I've been in the business really long time, and the last, you know, back in the 90s when we were talking about electric utility restructuring and destructuring and deregulation, and I always called it capsizing, there was a huge move afoot to get customers to switch from gas to electric heating, which didn't go over too well in New Orleans, as I recall from one of my client experiences. But the other thing is, and that's one of the reasons, just for a point of comparison or a point of context, there's always been this concern about fuel switching. And that's if you ever, you know, there's always a concern that the electric utilities are going to switch, try to get customers who are gas customers or propane customers to switch off their heating sources and using electricity. So fuel switching has always been sort of a real concern, especially with energy efficiency programs, because the commission obviously wants to be fuel neutral, and the commissions want customers to use energy efficient equipment, and both the gas and the electric utility customers would obviously like them to use their fuel as the primary source. So it's a complicated topic, and I don't mean to oversimplify it, but the notion is that electricity and the reason that it's a caught on in Minnesota primarily is one of the, and Ohio too, is it's a way to decarbonize or to wean customers off fossil fuels, and what they're going to do is they're going to use the excess power generated from solar and wind as an electric source instead of, saying, from coal or natural gas fire plants or other types of fossil fuels. So that's the notion, not to mention electric vehicles and gas, obviously.
Right.
Any other comments?
I had a question about, this is Evan Hughes, what is National Grid? Did it replace Niagara Mohawk or NYSEG, or who are they?
Do you want to answer that?
Yeah, that concerned New York.
Oh, sorry, folks. Yes, National Grid is the successor company to Niagara Mohawk.
National Grid basically bought all of a tremendous number of electric utilities in Massachusetts and New York, and I'm sure other states as well. But they bought, among others, Niagara Mohawk, Orange and Rockland. I mean, there's a whole slew of national grid companies that are out there. But they're headquartered. They're actually a British firm that's headquartered in Massachusetts. And, yeah, Massachusetts.
Anything else on that?
Yeah. Can I ask another question? In this sort of movement, beneficial electrification, do you think the more emphasis is put on utility behavior of utilities to change their behavior, or is it more changing the behavior of the consumers? And if it's both, what are some of the things that are being done in terms of, you know, communicating the benefits of beneficial electrification to just regular everyday people, you know, consumers? Are there any, what kind of campaigns, awareness campaigns or information campaigns are being launched, and who are doing these? Are the utilities sort of spearheading this, or I'm just wondering how this information, these technological changes and the importance of sort of moving to beneficial electrification, how does that get communicated to consumers?
It's pretty much every way you can think about, and it's in those states that are, you know, have really embraced this. Those would be California. Ohio is developing its Power Forward initiative, which is a whole grid modernization activity that also I'm quite certain will encourage electric vehicles and beneficial electrification, and Minnesota too. In Minnesota, they've had a whole series of a lot of stakeholder involvement and groups and a lot of study, and they've actually, you know, got the electric utilities on board, and they have quite a campaign within the stakeholder community. I don't know how much has trickled out to the average customer, but they are looking at ways to provide rebates for electric vehicles, for the utilities and other things, and space heating and things. So, the utilities are promoting this, obviously, because it's a way for them to build up off-peak load and is also a climate-friendly approach. So that's been – but it's mostly has been through either organizations that are environmental messengers or utilities primarily. I don't know if anybody saw the Super Bowl Bud commercial with the wind power, but that wasn't a mistake. That wasn't just that they're talking about the benefits of wind power. They're talking about the notion is getting wrapped up into the message of sustainability and renewability. So that's another little way of looking at it.
What is the role of storage in these things, and is it more expensive than the basic renewable power without storage?
Well, storage is another way to it's a way to provide electric capacity in the off-peak. So there's a lot of storage in terms of there's like atmosphere and things. It's a nice storage. So I don't know the cost. I mean, I guess it depends on how much you're paying regularly. But the notion is that you can use it as another way to, in combination with other renewable energy sources. Because one of the problems with solar, for example, is it only works certain amounts of times a day, and storage can help make it a more 24-hour solution. But I'm not the expert on storage per se. I'm just saying it's one of the things. So maybe somebody else on the call can help me out on that.
Patrick, do you want to make some comments about your knowledge is on this topic?
No, I have to confess that this term beneficial electrification is new to me. Everything Karen said makes sense. I have looked at grid modernization programs across, you know, much of the Midwest, and, you know, I could see how this would fit into that. But what I thought was interesting is this idea of grid beneficial electrification being, if I understood correctly, grid modernization plus energy efficiency.
Yep.
And what I, yeah, I'm not surprised to hear the notion that this could be viewed as another way for utilities to grow their load But at the same time, though, there's while there may be a push in that direction, I think by the mere fact of grid modernization itself, there's a pull back in the other direction because many of these grid modernization efforts are, if not advocating for, at least strongly looking at the reforming the utility business model to service as more of a platform. So it does mitigate some of that, you know, solely for load growth direction. But, you know, this is all very much in flux, but I think this is all very fascinating. And, Sierra, to answer your question, I don't really have anything to contribute other than those observations.
No, that's
fine. And one of the things that I did a little bit of poking around while you were talking, and one of the new kind of examples, I guess I can talk, I found is there's an example in Portland, Oregon, where Portland General Electric is actually going to be using a combination of renewable energy, solar and wind, as well as storage to help and reduce emissions while also remaining, maintaining the grid. So they view energy storage and renewables as part of the beneficial electrification. What they're trying to do is they're basically saying, we're going to take all these renewable sources and use them together to provide consistent electric generation that isn't using fossil fuels, and that will help guarantee a good sustainable future. And I'm sure folks are familiar with the general temperament out in Oregon. I mean, ironically, they have hydro, so they're already pretty renewable as it is, but they just went into a contract where they're going to own 100 megawatts of wind, and they're going to, over a 30-year power purchase, and the way they're going to offset the risks of wind is to have ice has to have energy storage, so for the times when the wind doesn't blow. So it's a whole approach, and that's why it's considered beneficial electrification. It's not just maybe I'm a cynic. It's not just the load growth building policy for utilities, but there's also that notion that this is a way to make renewable energy sustainable. And if you combine renewables with storage and to generate electricity, it's much more stable than if you – that's one of the problems with renewables is the wind doesn't always blow and the sun doesn't always shine. So we combine it with storage – and you have a modern grid, then you're using energy more efficiently and you don't need as much to do the same job. So it's a combination of renewable energy, energy storage, energy efficiency, grid modernization, all to promote electric usage and long-term. That's really, in a nutshell, what it's trying to do. So I hope that clarified it.
Jeff Hinsky, any thoughts?
Not directly on this topic, but related, particularly what kind of brought up this Portland gas and electric announcement yesterday. It seems there's sort of two different big picture strategies going on around the country, very much driven by policy and or political position of the various utilities. In some states, like in Virginia or Florida, Georgia, the big IOUs are controlling and mostly owning and then hence rate basing a lot of the renewables, the big solar and wind farms and things like that. And then other places like California and in the Northeast, for the most part, most of these are privately or, investor owned kind of things that are selling into either the utilities or individual users. And, as a solar developer and renewable energy advocate, I'm not sure that having the utilities really control that to such an extent is really, in the long term, it certainly helps to get a lot of renewables installed quickly, but it also, I think, in the big picture, does not create this distributed generation and modern grid that we all think we're heading towards. So more editorial comment, I guess, than anything.
No, that's good. Anybody have thoughts on that? Go ahead, Catherine.
No. I'm happy to listen to others because I'm just the messenger. I'm not the expert on this topic. I thought it was an interesting turn of events in the industry, and I thought it would be worth a discussion. But this is sort of a new, brave new world for a lot of folks. I spent most of my career in energy efficiency and talking about distributed energy resource and distributed energy, and also grid modernization. And these are all topics that we have to get sort of fluent in soon, because that's what the electric utilities and also cities are getting involved in too. I guess the other thing I wanted was mentioning to Sierra about this topic is I used to be on the board of a small little municipal utility in Florida, and one of the things that they did back in 2012 as a way to encourage shoppers was they put in two electric vehicle charging stations to encourage shopping in the downtown area. And because their reasoning was anyone who could afford to buy a Tesla is the kind of customer they wanted to shop in downtown, in the downtown area. And if, and the city didn't charge them for the cost of charging their electric vehicle. And it was a strategy to, one, promote the fact that this electric little municipal utility was sort of on the cutting edge, and, two, to sort of say, hey, we're trying to adopt electric vehicle. You know, we want to promote this. And we also want to let our customers in and get other customers from other jurisdictions to come in. So it was a really interesting economic development strategy for this, for the local downtown, as well as a way to sort of position the city as, hey, we may be small, but we understand that this is the future, and those are the kinds of folks we want to have in our community. And it's been a very successful little initiative, and I thought that's something that maybe cities haven't thought about doing, as putting electric vehicle chargers as a way to bring in revenue for the downtown shopping areas. But it's certainly an area that's going to be growing in interest going forward. So I wanted to sort of throw that one out there too.
Can I say something about, as someone who's studying public opinion and politics of clean energy, I find this concept, actually, this sort of labeling or this branding, pretty smart in the sense that it's the word beneficial. Not many people are going to contest that, right? It's such a, in some ways, it's a very vague concept, but it's also very positive. So in terms of, you know, getting support, it's a great idea. But at the same time, I feel like it's not a very, it doesn't lend itself to sort of fuel neutral approach, because there's a clear implication here, right? In order to be beneficial, we have to make this sort of transition to renewables. And yes, efficiency is important. It's sort of the low-hanging fruit. It's a lot more acceptable in public and, you know, policymakers. But switching to renewables, there are pockets of resistance, and there are utilities. Some large utilities are not very sort of favorable to that. So I'm wondering about the sort of political the success of this sort of concept, even though the branding of labeling of it is, I think, brilliant. I don't know whether or not everyone's going to see it the same way, because I believe there's absolutely nothing neutral in terms of the type of fuels that it's prescribing and it's sort of recommending. So anyway, this is my editorial.
Any comments?
Well, some folks are adding the terms environmentally beneficial. Or
you want to introduce yourself, please? Is that Chris?
Yes. Hi, this is Chris Carrick.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
So some folks are actually pushing back on this idea of beneficial and saying we should add the term environmentally beneficial or efficient beneficial electrification, just because there are issues, I think. I alluded to one earlier, such as, you know, what happens if 100 folks in a neighborhood on a single distribution circuit all purchase electric vehicles and plug them in at the same time? What happens? I don't know that we really have great insight into that question, and it's going to vary, you know, locality by locality. So, you know, just on this question of, you know, is this a good thing for cities to pursue or to get, you know, involved with? I think it's going to have to really, you know, we're going to have to rely on the local utilities, whether they're investor-owned or municipal utilities or co-ops or whatever, to become much more transparent into, you know, the capacities of their system.
Hi, this is Mark Scully from Connecticut, and I hadn't heard this term beneficial electrification until this call, but I was at a session last week held by the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, and it was focused on electric vehicles, but they could have called this session beneficial electrification, I think. The actual title was The Role of Time of Use Rates to Encourage EV Adoption and Mitigate Adverse Grid Impacts. And I was struck, it was to me as the clearest presentation I had been to recently, where I got the sense that the utility actually was trying to find a way to sort of find the silver lining here. One brief aside, a fairly new director of strategic development at Eversource, Charlotte Ansell, made the announcement that Eversource will no longer support the build-out of natural gas transmission infrastructure and are now committed to strategic electrification, which was news to many of us and quite startling. But there's some interesting presentations, and I shared a link with Sierra. One of the speakers, his name was Dana Lowell from MJ Bradley Associates. And again, this was all focused on electric vehicles, but he has several interesting examples of how utilities are incentivizing electric vehicle owners to charge when it helps the grid. And he mentioned one, and this is all in these slides that are available on the Deep Site and SN Sierra link, but he mentioned a very generous program with Con Edison where they actually pay you $150 to sign up. They'll pay you $20 a month if you don't charge in the summer during peak hours. And he said it's quite a generous program. But I was, and there was even extensive discussion during the session about the concept of vehicle-to-grid and using charging batteries at off-peak hours and the utility actually even accessing power from batteries. So I thought it was a startling sort of session. It could have been called beneficial electrification.
If you want to resend that to me, anybody that has anything, please go ahead and send me the information. I'll forward it to everybody. I don't think I did. I don't remember if I saw that or not, Mark. I might have. But
I just sent about 10 minutes ago.
Oh, well, that's why I didn't see it. Okay. All right. Super. Okay. Rick, do you have any comments on it? Reed's team?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that...
I can't hear you very well, Rick. You're sounding very distant.
Is that a little better? Can you hear me now?
A lot better. Yep, that's good. Go ahead.
Okay. So the latest issue of the Harvard Environmental Law Review has an article about energy storage, which says that if we don't get FERC and the states to review their policies and actually explicitly talk about fuels that are, beneficial, get behind the cleaner fuels, we're going to see energy storage used to prolong the life of coal plants.
Any thoughts about that?
This is Evan Hughes. That surprises me. What can they be thinking? I guess they're thinking that the coal plants will keep charging the batteries that are then available off-peak for the backing up solar. But it seems to me there are other ways to do that.
Well, I think, that was one reason why FERC and the states need to abandon the neutral approach to fuels. There are other reasons, of course.
Go ahead.
This is Evan Hughes. I had a question way up at the start on a national grid in upstate New York looking to go 100% renewable. Have they compared themselves to Copenhagen or perhaps to Germany? Germany on growth of solar and Copenhagen on being 100% solar electric.
Well, so this is Chris Garrick again. You know, the National Grid nor any of the other utilities have developed plans to get to 100%. The governor just announced in his State of the State address a month ago that he was going to increase the state's renewable energy target to 100% renewable by the year 2040. That's 5 years ahead of California and Hawaii. But there are no concrete plans. As I said before, there is no state energy plan that would lay out how we would do that through a combination of storage, beneficial electrification, general efficiency and conservation measures, and so forth, and you know, what the interplay between those things might be, because that's really the key. Beneficial electrification is just one among many strategies for what people call, you know, grid flexibility or grid modernization. And I think, at least from my perspective, the ultimate goal has to be decarbonization and deep decarbonization. So how do those things play together to get us there? I will just say, you know, someone mentioned a moratorium on natural gas in Connecticut. Some of folks may have heard that Con Edison in Westchester has put a moratorium on new natural gas pipelines, which has caused quite a bit of consternation amongst some folks in that area, particularly for economic development prospects. But Con Ed does have a plan, at least you know, in regards to this particular geography, $223 million Smart Solutions Initiative, they call it, to reduce natural gas demand through efficiency and beneficial electrification. So I think this is a good pilot, not only on the technique and the, you know, the technical approach to this issue, but also on the politics of this issue. So I encourage people to Google around and do some digging. You'll find lots of articles written about this in the last couple of weeks.
Don Walter, we haven't heard from you. Do you have any thoughts on this?
I have one thought, and I've been wondering whether is there any discussion, especially if you look at localization of clean energy generation, is there any thought of either developing parallel direct current supplies of electricity?
That's a really interesting point. Anybody comment on that?
This is Evan Hughes. I would guess that that would be in association with microgrids that were using solar in a local area, and they could have their distribution done by direct current and avoid the inefficiency and cost of the inverters.
Well, what about this beautification of electric, whatever the marketing term is, in that overall program in those states, have they looked at that type of solution?
Or is that, I don't know.
Weeds? That may be in the weeds.
I'm speculating.
Catherine, do you have any thoughts on that?
I don't know
no.
of any case example.
Yeah, I don't have anything. I know that this is just, it gets into the distributed energy resources, the DERs, that is another, or distributed generation notion that's been talked about too, where you set up mini power plants. It's all part of the whole, topic area, but it's, again, another very specialized subgroup that I'm just trying to get my arms around myself.
Well, I can tell you that it's amazing that in California the building codes don't really support dual wiring in houses.
Nothing amazes me about California.
You can have low voltage direct current, but mm-hmm. you can't have higher voltage direct current. Okay, just thought I'd ask.
Any other thoughts on this? I know some server farms have discussed direct current, which would, I think, be a lot more efficient in the long run.
Well, those would be – this is Evan. Those would be cases where there's a big electricity use at a site that could be surrounded by solar to supply it, and then they might as well use DC for that special application at a given small area.
Anybody else have any thoughts on this? Okay. Well, we can end the call if we'd like, and we have a couple other calls coming up here. And I'll be getting the information out to you in the next couple of days. Should be quite interesting. And Oksan has, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to learn how to pronounce your name. Is it Oksan?
Oksan.
Is that better? Oksan.
Yes, thank you.
Has done some interesting research on cities and whether or not, why and why not they're interested in renewable energy. So she's done some research on that. So we'll be talking about that in another conference call coming up here. And we have one next week where Mark Scully is going to be involved, and I'll be inviting some other folks to be part of that call. And we'll be talking about Mark and New Mexico also, interested in learning what they can do with their cities in order to help them move forward in the area of renewable energy. So we'll be talking about that, and then have a microgrid call coming up in March. So anyhow, any more thoughts before we go?
Can I ask something which is a little, it's not exactly the beneficial electrification, but just because it's such a current topic, everyone's talking about it. I wonder what folks in this conference think about the new Green Deal that is being proposed. What are the initial reactions to that? Is it possible to talk about that for a few minutes? Or?
Oh, sure. No, go ahead.
No. I'm just curious how.
No, that's all right. Anybody else? Patrick, do you have any thoughts on that one?
Not yet. I've yet to read it.
Okay. Anybody else? Maybe a little early for that. I don't know. We can certainly have that as a discussion topic at some point, though. I agree with you.
There's nothing concrete, super concrete yet, I guess. But I would think something like beneficial electrification would be part of it too, because there's a lot of discussion about the grid modernization and that. I wondered if people had any initial sort of reaction to it.
I do. I would like to make a comment on that. It's extraordinarily vague, and it needs people like us to help them fill in the details. It's
Absolutely.
Right now vulnerable to attack by people who want to portray it as something negative, as something that will make us give up things that we want. And I think it's up to people with some expertise, such as people on this call have, to be able to help advocates make the case that we have the ability to fashion something that will be better off for us. And if we don't move forward with a Green New Deal, then we will be deprived of the things that we like. And if we move forward, we have a chance of actually retaining them and having things that that we would like to have. So I think we are needed to help them make the case. I don't think if you read the plan, you're going to see what you need to see. It needs to be put in there, and it's up to us to help them put it in there.
This is Evan. I would second that very strongly. I think we need to get that element into it. And the New Deal part means it's economic stimulus, that creates jobs and grows economies as part of becoming green.
Well, you'll have to forgive the lawyer in me who wants to read something before he supports it. I think you're projecting a little bit onto whatever was proposed, and that's fine. But, you know, if it's, as you suggest, very vague and in need of detail, then I think that should have probably been hashed out before it was released. But, again, I don't know much about it other than the headlines I see, but I would read it. Me personally, I'm going to read it before I weigh in on it.
But New Deal means grow the economy.
Right, I understand that, and I understand what green means too. But if you're going to put a piece of legislation before your colleagues, you might want to have it worked out.
It's actually receiving a lot of criticism because it's not, but it's also a resolution and it's a vision. It's not a piece of legislation.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's more aspirational at this point. It's a call for action, but the details, specifics of that action need to be hashed out yet. And but I agree with the person who responded first. Because it's so vulnerable to attack, and already that's happening, I think smart people, knowledgeable people need to, you know, fill in the blanks and help policymakers figure that out. And I don't think it's going to be an easy process, but maybe we need to think of it as a good start, and at least by, you know, changing the conversation, national conversation, I think it may be doing something good, but the devil is in the details, I think, and I think we all have a role in making it more real.
I think one of the most exciting aspects of it is that it talks about putting us on a war footing. This is the type of challenge that we're not going to face through incremental actions. And I've read through most of it, and I find I agree with it entirely. I think it is going to be a huge political football, but the idea that we have to solve the climate crisis and we can't do it on the backs of the poor is absolutely essential. And we see in France what happens when some environmental measures do disproportionately affect the lower income.
Any more thoughts? Okay. All right. Well, we'll go ahead and end the call. And again, I'll be sending information out in the next few days about the upcoming webinars and calls. And thanks, everybody, for attending. You know, one thing I'd like to do that we haven't done, and why don't we each of you introduce yourselves, just starting out. Oksan, you want to do that just briefly, real quick?
Sure. I'm Oksan Bayugan. I'm a political science professor at University of Connecticut, and I'm doing some research, research on various aspects of energy, but I think for the purposes of this group, I'm curious about local, municipal-level clean energy performance. Thank you.
And Patrick Morand?
Hi, Patrick Morand with the law firm of Duane Morris. I'm in the D.C. office, and focus primarily on energy regulatory matters as well as some renewable energy development, and have a particular interest in microgrids, both in their development as well as the regulatory issues associated with them.
All right. Mark Scully.
Hi, yeah, Mark Scully. I'm president of People's Action for Clean Energy, a nonprofit in Connecticut promoting clean energy. And as Sierra said, I'll have a chance to say a lot more next week. But a core activity that we're involved in is working with individual towns in Connecticut, benchmarking their energy usage, getting an understanding of how much energy they actually currently use and how they could transition to 100% renewable.
All right. Jeff Hinsky.
Yeah, so this is Jeff Hinsky. I'm the VP of Policy with Clean Focus Renewables and Green Skies Renewables. We are a CNI, commercial industrial solar developer, that actually also works very extensively in the municipal, what in this industry anyway, known as MUSH, the municipals, universities, schools, and hospital sector. And so we have a lot of solar installations that we operate under PPAs for various municipalities and school districts, particularly in the Northeast.
Okay, Rick Riebstein.
Hi, I teach environmental law and policy at Boston University.
Evan Hughes.
Evan Hughes in Menlo Park, California. I worked on renewable energy at the Electric Power Research Institute for 24 years and primarily on geothermal and biomass during those years, but I've been interested in all renewables and the role in cutting greenhouse gas reductions.
Catherine, we know who you are, but why don't you tell us a little bit about what you do?
Oh, hi. Okay, so I have my own little firm, Johnson Consulting Group, based in Maryland, and I have been and my client, my staff work in Portland, Oregon, and I have about 25 years experience in developing and evaluating energy efficiency programs across all the different sectors for electric and gas utilities. I also serve as an expert in EM&V, or evaluation, measurement, and verification, for several public service commissions around the country. I'm hopefully back in California once they get everything figured out. But I've also been active in the energy efficiency world for quite a while, and that's really where my interest is. So nice to be on the phone with all of you.
Thank you.
Don Walter.
Greetings. I actually did a full circle. I started off life in the oil industry, developing oil and gas, and then over the years transitioned, and now I run a local solar developing company. We do solar for commercial ag and residents, mainly in our large county.
Right. Chris Carrick was here earlier. I think he explained what he did. I know he's left. So Chris is from New York. So Oksan is from Connecticut, right?
Right.
Patrick is Washington, D.C. Mark is Connecticut. Jeff Shinsky, you're up California, right?
Correct.
Rick Riefstein is Massachusetts, Evans, California, Catherine is Maryland and East Coast, John Walters, California, and Chris is New York. So we have an interesting representation of different cities across the country on this call. So, all right, we're going to go ahead and end the call unless anybody else has any more comments. Thanks for introducing yourselves. I'm really delinquent on that. I don't do as well as I should, I know, but sometimes we have really lengthy calls, so I don't like to spend too much time on it unless we have time to do that. So thanks for everybody for attending, and I'll be getting this information out to you in a couple of days here and hope to see you next time.
Thank you, Sierra.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.